What I'd like for us to talk today about is calling, vocation, and vocational discernment. Now, this is a topic that is making the rounds, thankfully. Those of you that know me personally know that this is something I've been researching and contemplating and acting in for myself for a while. Definitely a topic of interest for me, but I don't think it's just that. From time to time, I believe the Spirit of God blows through like the wind, right? And will impart some similar observations to many like-minded people. This is how change happens. This is how the Spirit helps us mature and grow and challenge one another with new ideas about the ways that we can be growing in dependence on God instead of our own sense of self, our own sense of what we're supposed to do with our life. So I'm going to start by sharing a story, actually a few stories with you, kind of my own experience with following God's calling, and then I want to introduce you to some of the thoughts and wisdom and philosophies that I've been encountering and benefiting from as I sought out for myself this idea of God's calling, vocation, and career, jobs, how these things interplay with one another. And why I'm starting to come around to the notion that God is actually doing something with our ideas of vocation and occupation in the 21st century world that might be something new. So that's where I'd like for us to go today. Now, some of you will have already noticed that this podcast is not the podcast I thought I would be giving you for this episode. So first off, I'd like to get these to you about, you know, once a month. So this one's already a little behind that schedule, unfortunately. But more importantly, the past three episodes were based out of the Gospel of Luke. Chapter 7, 8, we're about ready to go into chapter 9. So this episode was meant to present the final scenes of that encounter, that journey with Jesus, I called it. So just so you know, that episode is far from forgotten. I could sit here and blame PhD work, job applications for big person jobs, any number of other factors. What matters is not those things. What matters is that the last two episodes of Luke's presentation of Jesus will be on their way to you shortly. Wow, would it be a huge mistake for us not to finish that series up? There is so much going on. Luke 7, 8, 9. Preparing that series has really fleshed out for me how messy and gritty and chaotic Jesus' ministry probably looked from the inside, from the ground. Again, I've said it before, when I read those chapters in Luke, I feel like I've been on that mission trip. The one where everything just totally goes off script, and you have to stop taking yourself seriously because you end up in these absurd situations. Absurd and yet orchestrated by the Spirit of God. So look for those episodes. I don't want to promise you an exact time frame, but it won't be another month. I would not do that to us. I would not do that to you. Okay. Vocation and calling. Buckle up and hold on for this one. So after college, I had all these ideas about what I was going to do. Mostly half-baked. Half-baked is probably generous, if not quarter-baked, let's say. These ideas were very doughy, which is great for talking about cookie dough, maybe not so much for pizza. At one point, I started the application for the Foreign Secret Service. Think of James Bond or Archer, if Archer had existed back then. That's pretty much exactly what was in my mind, because, you know, how badass would that be? And that was literally the only reason. Well, I ended up living and working in Scotland after college, showed up with no job, living in a hostel, which was both exhilarating and terrifying. I'll save those stories for a later time, but suffice it to say, when I moved back to the States, I stuck around my parents' place just long enough to throw some clothes and a notebook into my 1990 Chevrolet Lumina, the transportation of kings, and I was off to Las Vegas for a six-month YWAM discipleship training school, or DTS. You might be familiar with this. Up until then, I had never been west of Illinois by car. So this was an adventure. I'd been on YWAM bases before. They're all really different. Some are incredibly modern and nice. Others are more simple. But I really didn't know anything about this particular base other than the address. This is long before Google Maps had the little guy who would give you the street view that you could just drag onto the street. So I really had no idea what it looked like or what the neighborhood looked like, anything. So I finally make it to Vegas. Around the corner, through these neighborhoods, miles off of the strip, 3375 South Mojave Drive. And there it is. It's this church. I mean, it's a church building. We're going to be living in a church. What had happened is the old church that used to be there had outgrown this building. And they built a giant facility literally next door. So here we were moving in. Myself and one other guy lived out of the children's ministry room. There was a brand new twin mattress still wrapped in that, you know, that plastic lining. It's just laying there on the floor, you know. Missionaries and drug smugglers have a few things in common. Maybe not their overall mission, but sleeping arrangements, certainly. There's no other furniture in the room whatsoever. Two mattresses, no furniture in what used to be the kids' ministry room. Now, I had done an outreach with the Nashville YWAM DTS during college, so I was used to DTSs being 15, 20 students, somewhere around there. Well, we had three in Vegas. And, you know, here I was thinking there'd be all these cute Christian missionary girls I'd meet on our school. We'd, you know, of course fall in love and be missionaries somewhere cool and exciting, live the life. No. The three of us could not have been more different. The other guy, he was from Eastern Washington State, never had lived away from his home in all of his life. Huge guy with this awesome red beard. And the other girl in our school, she was like 17 from the Cayman Islands. This little tiny kid with his laugh. Oh man, she was fun to be around. Well, as it turned out, this was the very first school that this base had ever run, and they were literally still moving into this church building for the first time. I will probably always remember that first night after the shock of all this change and this sense of like, okay, this is my life for the next 6 months. And what have I gotten myself into? Like, this is just so far outside of my experience. We would help out at this cafe for the homeless downtown off the strip. I felt unbelievably useless most of the time. All kinds of people coming in with mental illness. They were on one drug or another. Some folks just wandered in drunk. Or on the other end of the spectrum, you get these whole families, six, seven kids. I mean, I got a little better over time. But if I'm honest, most of the time I was serving food. I would make small talk as the customers, these new friends of ours, passed through the line. But when that was done, I would try to hightail it back to the kitchen to help clean dishes out of sight. Because it was so much easier for me than trying to figure out how to have a good conversation with someone that had three different personalities. You know, here comes George, who's he going to be today? Or moms that would stare into thin air while their kids crawled under the tables and over other patrons. Lord only knows what they were wrestling with. So 3 months into the school, we're getting ready for our outreach portion. We were meant to head off to Australia. Except that I didn't have all the money that I needed for the outreach. Now, this is not at all unusual for DTS students. But here it is a couple weeks before we're supposed to leave, and I just don't have it. Now, I am a terrible fundraiser. If I ever come to you saying that I'm going to be an entrepreneur, just, I don't know, lock me in a walk-in freezer and explain to me, sit me down, tell me the way things are. I am horrible at this. It's one of those moments where I just had to say, okay, God, maybe you brought me here to Las Vegas for something very specific. I mean, I've grown so much in just a few short months. You know, we've done this outreach all up and down the California coast, places I'd never seen, never been before. San Francisco, Chico, LA, the street cafe that we worked in Vegas, you know, maybe that was it. Maybe it's okay if the journey ends here, if this season is done. I just remember thinking about it, being a little stressed over it sometimes. You know, am I going to finish the school? Am I not? But, you know, mostly it was just a spirit of such gratitude. No matter if I finished the school or not, it was just this fun and terrifying and sometimes something deep inside. Let's just maybe call that the spirit of God. That's what I would call it. It knew it was what I needed. And exactly where I needed to be. Just far enough outside my comfort area. Well, the money came. Not by my own financial prowess or ability to beg, believe me. But through much more mundane means. But in any case, we were off. Lots of crazy cool stories I could tell. But one that I want to be sure to relate for today's topic. It came one night, when our team was invited to a church outside of Brisbane, Australia. Now, I was usually the one volunteering to speak at things like this. I know, surprise, right? So I gave this sermon on calling, obedience to God's call. Yeah, 23-year-old Steve giving a sermon on the importance of obedience to God. And I'm giving this to kids, college students, grown men and women with families, retirees. Oh, well, all I can guess is that the Spirit of God spoke through whatever foolishness I'd actually preached that night. I mean, who knows? Because after my sermon, we had an altar call of sorts. And there was this guy, a father. He'd brought his family with him. And he comes up to where I'm standing, tears in his eyes. And he says to 23-year-old Steve, "I always thought that I was supposed to be a pastor. I ignored it. I didn't even try." So how stupid did I feel? That kind of regret is holy ground. It's a sacred lament when someone says something like that to you. I knew it. What do you say to something like that? Now, would this guy have been a pastor for sure if he'd followed that path? Well, maybe he would have, and it would have been great. Maybe it would have gone nowhere. But then he would have known. I tried, it didn't work, cool. Who knows? But that night, God dealt with him. Why didn't you try, at least? Why didn't you explore this thing that was burning inside of you? It might have been amazing, it might have failed in every way possible, but now there's this huge what-if hanging over you. It's those what-ifs that'll get you. You ever meet somebody that's lived their whole life with this burning what-if hanging over them? Of course you have, it's almost everybody. And I'm not talking about the casual, hey, wouldn't it have been crazy and fun if I'd become a foreign Secret Service agent? Because I know beyond any shadow of a doubt that was a stupid idea. And I don't regret 1% not following that path. It was just a fun idea. Those people who have lived a while, they've had a career, they've followed the straight and narrow life, they've played things nice and safe in our Western context, and they suddenly look back and realize how that trajectory has kept them on autopilot. When I first started my job with the state about 9 years ago, there was this older gentleman just a couple years away from retirement. And he'd been in that same job for literally his entire life, since he was like 20. There's nothing wrong with that. That used to actually be incredibly common. It was a stable income. Safe, little chance of a layoff. It's not that any of those things by themselves guarantee a life of regret. That's not what I'm insinuating. Those are blessings. But listen, I got to know this guy those couple of years. Pretty happy guy. Really mild, really reasonable, really responsible. Well, he finally announces his retirement. And so I went into his office on his last day to wish him off. And this guy was shell-shocked. Really. I mean, he was somewhere else. Like, he'd just come off the rice paddies of Vietnam, man. Here's what he said. Quote, "It all went so fast." End quote. Not once or twice. Three times he said that in the space of our couple-minute interaction. It all went so fast. That shocked something loose deep inside of me. I knew that I would never forget that moment, that conversation. I don't know if it was the what-ifs that finally caught up with him, if he was just feeling untethered from this life he'd known the entire time he'd been an adult. I don't know. But there was something an awful lot like regret in his voice. Like he was an animal that was trapped in a cage. Now, there's another side to this equation. Because a stable job is a good thing. Health insurance is a good thing. Talk to my friends up here in Ontario. They can't imagine living with the uncertainties of the U.S. healthcare system. For them, moving to the States would be a huge sacrifice, actually a huge risk. Isn't that interesting? See, there's always going to be some amount of tension between conservative wisdom and pushing the boundary into the what-ifs. So I'm just going to say, that's never going to totally go away. If you and I try to ignore that tension, try to push it down, try to stray too far towards playing life safe, or on the opposite extreme, to be unwisely reckless and not think through the consequences of our life choices. Either one of those extremes, that tension will always resurface somewhere. It's better to just embrace it, hug it out, live alongside of it. It's when we hear the call to something new, something a little beyond the boundary of where we thought we would go. And that call is coming genuinely from the Spirit. It's when we push that call down out of fear, that's what we'll regret later. It comes down to a distinction for me and for apparently many other voices that I trust, that I've been reading and conversing with. This distinction between career and vocation. See, these two things aren't always the same, though they might be, but they might not. And I say this as someone who has struggled for years between this idea of having a career, a job that pays the bills and is good, fulfilling work. But then there's this other thing, these spiritual gifts of teaching and mentoring that I know are my vocation. So for years I've wondered about, well, how to live in such a way that my career and vocation feed off of one another in a positive way. A way that I won't regret 20 or 30 years from now looking back. I've wondered many times if my job should also be my vocation. So I started looking into things like becoming a Jesuit, or doing a PhD in biblical studies, or being a pastor, to one day get paid to do my vocation of teaching. I found so many things during these explorations, one of which, though, is that certain traditions are really good about recognizing the dead ends and false starts and risk and honest adventures that go into discerning a vocational calling. How to live that out. How to live and explore that tension that I was talking about. And I think the Catholics really have this nailed down. When you enter seminary as a Catholic, with the intention of one day being ordained, taking the vows. Well, you don't take your vows right away. You're meant to enter into that seminary experience with a strong what if. You don't actually take your vows for 2 years. And in that 2 years, you're learning from a spiritual director. You're learning from your professors and your classmates. You're feeling out what it looks like to travel down that road. Listen to this quote. This is Father Bariel. He's at St. Thomas Aquinas Seminary. Listen to what he says. Quote, "With every vocation comes a risk. How many young people have entered the seminary or the convent and have lawfully left? Not only have they no need to be ashamed, but on the day of judgment they will be astonished at the eternal and extraordinary recompense that they will then receive for having, one day when they were young, made this gesture of willingness to leave it all for Christ. It is a gesture with which the Master is content. God has willed that with every vocation there should be some risk. There is a great deal of risk in a marriage, in every enlistment of a marine or a soldier. Why would one wish that there be no risk for the sake of Christ?" End quote. Isn't that guidance just filled with grace and possibility? I find it to be. Here's another. This quote is by Peter Ryan. Peter Ryan is a Jesuit professor of moral theology at Mount St. Mary's. Quote, "With respect to future possibilities, we cannot discern whether we should do something, but only whether we should try to do it. God often calls men into the seminary without calling them to be priests. God is perfectly free to call someone into the seminary with a view of calling them out, using the experience to form that man for what God really does have in mind. Still, we should not expect our lives to make complete sense in this world. We should not expect them to turn out beautiful and well-proportioned and perfectly acceptable from a temporal point of view, because we are cooperating with God's plan for our eternal happiness." End quote. Right? You know what? I'll wait. Just rewind that quote by Peter Ryan and listen to it a few more times. There is so much good, so much wisdom in there. You see, I've had several good Christian friends that have been made to feel guilty for not wanting to be missionaries, for example, or who were missionaries for some length of time and then weren't anymore for any number of reasons. And there was this guilt that coming back home and working a normal job was the end of their usefulness to God, was the end of their spiritual journey. No. No, God is doing something different and unique in you, and my journey is not going to look like your journey. It's not going to look like my missionary friend's journey. Often when others, especially in a Christian context, try to make you or me feel guilty or inadequate for honestly following where we feel God is leading us, that can often speak more to their sense of calling, their insecurities, than it speaks to our own path. Just have your antenna up when you feel guilt or shame about vocational goals. Be aware of what you're feeling and what others are saying. Those are times to step back and ask, what just happened? And what just happened that I would feel this way? Okay, let's talk a little bit more about this idea of vocation versus career. I want to read you another quote. This one is from a writer named Brad Jurczyk. Brad Jurczyk writes, he's written this open letter to his sons. You can find it online. Red Letter Christians, I think, has picked it up. But here's what he says in this letter. Quote, "When I say career, what I mean is the idea of a job that you work at to make money. Get promotions, become an expert, and eventually retire and earn a pension. There's nothing really wrong with having a career, or even a few careers. But there is something more important that we call a vocation. A vocation may also include getting a paycheck and going to a workplace. But there is much more. A vocation is a calling that can span over many careers. Some people have a calling that has nothing to do with their career. Grandpa Jurczyk has had a long-term vocation as an encourager and evangelist, even though his career was entirely given to government bureaucracy. End quote. Now let's talk for a minute about this risk of exploration, exploring vocation. Because unfortunately, the world we live in is often not as gracious as the Catholic seminary. The risk in stepping out and exploring a vocation is real. It will put all your anxieties on the table, out in the open. It will show you who you really are. And my experience, at least, has been that it tends to strip off the protective layers where we've been hiding those anxieties. This is purposeful on God's part, so that he can help us work through those anxieties. You've probably heard Luke 14, verse 28 before, you know, count the cost. This is where Jesus gives the example of someone sitting down. He's going to build a building, going to build a tower. But this person takes an objective, hard look at the numbers and the facts and the money before starting building. Count the cost. What's it going to take? Well, Jesus gives this example as a way to encourage his listeners that being in the life that God intends for you comes with a cost. And we need to know that up front. Part of that cost might be financial, not earning as much as you might otherwise. Part of that cost is that you'll find out who your friends are. Part of that cost is just a dose of hard reality. You'll find out who supports you and who may not be as good a friend as you thought they might be. Because when you step out with some measure of faith and do something unexpected that goes off the script, people who you've worked alongside of for a long time, people who you've shared powerful experiences with, some of them might suddenly disappear. You might find that they are suddenly cold toward you. You might sense that certain people who you've trusted are about to do the fade out, the ghost. You know how sometimes you can just sense that coming? Yeah. It's happened to me. It's happened to me a few times. It might happen to you. It's just going to happen when you go off the script. Just know that some people are going to lose interest in you and your life. Because maybe that thing that they were getting or benefiting from you and your presence in their life, it's not going to be there anymore. But wouldn't you rather know that now? Look, truth can suck, especially when it wounds you in some way, but it's still truth. And in the long run, I'd rather know who's in it with me for the long run and who isn't. I don't know. That's me. Recognize that if you're in a Western world context, especially the U.S., you work and operate in a system that may not reward you for being true to God's call in your life, unless it just so happens to benefit that system. It might very well punish you. Look, ageism is real. Layoffs are real. Yes, Christians might get laid off or might get discriminated against either because of their faith or because they're single or because they're married or because they don't like your tie. It happens all the time. Employers may look at that resume of yours with a year-long gap when you traveled the world or volunteered at a refugee camp or explored seminary, or you took a job somewhere you thought was going to be amazing and the job turned out to be a nightmare. Or that city you moved to that turned out to be a lot harder to live in than you thought it would be. Employers might not care one bit about the journey you've been on. They'll just dismiss you as flaky and a hippie. That risk is a cost you might, probably will, have to pay. But there might be another employer in the same field hiring at the same time that will see those same experiences as the mark of someone with incredible character and passion that they would love to have on their team. You just won't know. And that's part of what makes this all fun and terrifying and so important. Don't forget that God sees you and travels with you when you yield to his guidance. And God works through hiring managers and landlords. In the Old Testament, God uses kings like he uses chess pieces to get people often on the margins of society, often vulnerable and desperate, into the center where they can have a more abundant life. Did you really think if he can do that, that he doesn't see and hear you? Now look, it might sound a little cheesy or whatever, but you can't forget that God notices you and hears you when it does all come crashing down around you. Or more like it feels like it's crashing all down around you. Don't forget who's on your side. Don't forget why we're doing this. Who it is that's calling you out onto this journey. You're taking a risk by stepping out. But you're taking a risk by not stepping out. You're taking the risk that you'll end your career in 20 or 30 years and look back and realize you've got a pile of what-ifs that'll haunt you and there is no way to fix it. Okay, there is way, way, way more that I could say about this. My personal journey and all the knowledge and wisdom of others that I've had the privilege of swimming in the past couple years. At some point, I want to talk about wisdom. The Bible encourages us to gather around us a multitude of counselors or advisors, which is, of course, fantastic life guidance. I mean, that's common sense 101. But I've also found that really wise, really godly people can also sometimes give really bad advice, especially when it comes to your or my personal vocation. It's just something I've seen, something I've noticed. People come to the table with their own presuppositions, their own way of doing things, especially if they're older than you, their own agendas, quite frankly, and sometimes people you really think you can trust to give you impartial advice are actually quite tone deaf to your own path. And they try to superimpose their own path and their own purpose over your own. So, something to think through, that discussion in depth will have to be another time. I'd also love to talk more at some point about our risk profiles. And what do I mean by that? Well, this goes back to the idea of owning your own self, knowing your strengths, knowing your default modes of life, knowing the areas that God is calling you to develop, and where those personal boundaries are for you, and which ones God would have you step beyond. The way that we discover our risk profile is, of course, by taking risks, exploring, feeling things out. So naturally, we're going to get it wrong sometimes. We're going to step into things for a season that don't turn into permanent means of using our vocation. That risk profile is really important to understand, though. When I was 22, 23, and I drove to Las Vegas to sleep in a children's ministry room for 6 months, my risk profile was almost limitless. I mean, there really wasn't much I wouldn't try. But I also had a lot of safety valves. I knew if I really got in over my head, well, my parents' house was still in Ohio. I still had that magical credit card in my back pocket. I still had my bachelor's degree and lots of time to figure out what, if anything, to do with it. I had my parents' health insurance. Well, my risk profile now, in my 30s, is quite a bit different. Health insurance is more of a factor. You know, it's funny, right after I moved to Canada to test out this idea of a PhD, my teeth decided that they were going to start rearranging themselves and getting all crooked. Well, my student health insurance doesn't include dental work. So I had to be okay with letting that slide for a season. And maybe smiling a bit goofier than I normally would. I moved into a house with 5 other people. And I went from a 2-bedroom apartment that I had all to myself, which in some ways wasn't as bad as I thought it would be. But I also know that I couldn't do it for much more than a year or two. Same way I'm not okay with it being without dental insurance for years. I'm okay with it right now. There's realizations I came to about blessing my family and friends with, you know, gifts and for Christmas and birthdays, travel expenses, you know, blessing others financially, missionaries that I support. These are all things that are tough to budget for when you're living off of savings. Again, something I'm comfortable with right now, but I'm not comfortable with forever. It's part of my risk profile. There's always going to be that tension between the risk and the payoff. Being responsible versus stepping out. Taking calculated risks in faith. Part of counting the cost, part of risking well, is understanding your risk profile. What are you willing to give up, and for how long? What are the things that may not be important now, but in 5 years might be really important? Is getting a job after your adventure going to be difficult in your field? Or are you okay with venturing into a new field that maybe is totally different from what you were doing? As far as resources on exploring vocation, one resource that I consistently recommend is the Ignatian method of discernment. This is the method which St. Ignatius of Loyola arrived at in his spiritual disciplines. If you search online, you will come up with no shortage of guidance on that method, though of course be careful with what resource you go with. I mean, make sure it's reputable. I can definitely recommend the presentation of the discernment process in Father James Martin's book, which is The Jesuit Guide to Almost Everything. But of course there are others. At some point down the line, I'd love to do a whole episode just on that Ignatian method of discernment. For now, though, I hope this has been helpful. I mean, we're just scratching the surface, and I've just given you a couple illustrations and stories and quotes. If they're helpful for you, great. I hope that they are. Remember, you might have your job and your life as you know it right now, but it's natural, it's normal that you still have a longing for something more and something deeper. So pay attention to that. It might be God waking something new up within you. It helps to be with people on the margins, people who may have more material and spiritual needs than you. That will always, almost always, keep you centered and focused on the things that God truly cares about and what he's doing inside your own life. You know, here I keep trying to end this episode, and I keep thinking of more I want to say. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to quote Brad Jurczyk one more time. We quoted him a while ago. And then I'm going to turn the mic off. But here's Brad. Quote, "I've often been afraid that if I teach and write what God is showing me, then doors will close and money will dry up and I'll end up having to settle for a lousy job that I hate. But that's not been my story, has it? See, that's just career thinking. But calling thinking tells me that when I do what God calls me to do, he will open the doors and make the connections for me to do it. When I have been faithful to take risks in teaching on the edge and pissing people off, you guys know what has happened. God opened many more doors and provided many more opportunities. There is just no need to be afraid as you pursue God's calling." End quote. Grace and peace to you all. We'll talk again soon.